Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Fight fans, we welcome you into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Big show planned for you today. We got a twofer. We got Andrew Maloney joining us and Mike Coppinger. Obviously, Andrew fought in the fight this past weekend against Josh Franco. A lot of controversy, so we'll all get it all figured out with Andrew Maloney. Mike Coppinger is going to give us the news and notes because there are a lot going on in the world of boxing. But before we get to those interviews, we have a big announcement here on the show. We have a new sponsor, the Esports Boxing Club. The boxing video game that fans have wanted for so long is finally here. I've seen some of the footage. I've seen some of the graphics. I've seen some of the fighters that are involved with it. How would you like to fight with Toro Gotti? I would like to do that. And without further ado, let's bring on this official trailer for the Esports Boxing Club. How long have boxing fans wanted the video game? It's finally here. On the other side of things, we'll get to our interviews with Andrew Maloney and Mike Coppinger. Here it is, the Esports Boxing Club.
For the count, this the fight of my life, this the time of my life. You wanna take my life, better be ready to fight. You wanna take my rights, better be ready to fight. My back against the wall, gotta be ready to fight.
Okay, let's bring in our first guest of the show, Andrew Maloney. You saw him fight on Saturday night over on Top Rank on ESPN versus Joshua Franco. A little controversy in that fight. What's boxing without a little bit of controversy? Hopefully we have a resolution to that. And with that, Andrew, we're going to bring him in right now. Thank you so much for joining us here on Inside Boxing Live, taking a few moments out of your day here. Now, there was a lot of emotions on that fight night, that post-fight interview. You saw the emotions on display. Where are you at now, a few days after, you know, collecting your thoughts?
I'm still obviously devastated that belt, that world title, wasn't strapped back around my waist and isn't coming back home with me to Australia like it should be. But we're still trying to have that decision overturned. I met with Bob Arum yesterday at the Top Rank office, and we're doing what we can to have that decision overturned and myself to be crowned as champion, as I rightfully should. So we're still hopeful.
Yeah, and I saw that you've hired Josh Dubin, who is a noted boxing attorney. He's filed a suit. Do you know anything about when we could potentially see the hearing or the next steps in terms of the litigation?
Yeah, that's right. I spoke with Josh yesterday, and we've started the process. I've got no idea how long this could take, but hopefully we have an answer sooner or later. And at the moment, I'm just looking forward to firstly getting home and seeing my family, and then getting back into training and getting ready for this third fight.
Yeah, that's the thing. Boxers don't want to talk to attorneys. They want to worry about fighting. They want to worry about when's the next fight. They don't want to talk about litigation. But unfortunately, that is the case that we have here. Now, I want to talk about the actual fight, what you saw in the ring. And I had broken this down extensively. I put a bunch of videos out on Twitter, and I went through each frame by frame. Was there a moment where Russell Moura, I know that he said accidental headbutt and he kind of looked over to the commission. Was there a moment where he came over to your corner or someone from the commission came over to your corner to let you know that there was an accidental headbutt? Because that plays a key role in your strategy and you would figure that they would have to let you know that. Were you aware that that was the call in that first round?
No, I wasn't aware at all. And Russell Moura didn't communicate that to us in our corner. I believe he told their corner that the damage was from a head clash, but he didn't tell our corner that. And you're right, that would have changed my strategy. I knew in my head that it was from a punch, so I continued to target that eye and ended up closing the eye, which stopped the fight. But had I known that he'd ruled that being from a head clash, I wouldn't have done that. I would have waited till the four rounds had passed before I started to target that eye.
Right, because I was going to say, you would have clearly boxed a little when you went to the body. You know, you landed 23 jabs in the 6 minutes. It was clear that that was a game plan coming into this fight. You were fighting beautifully, too. You know, looked very fluid in there. Punches were flying. In your mind, there was you probably figured there was no doubt that you were going to get him out of there.
Yeah, that's right. I felt in total control. I had an excellent training camp, and I came into this fight really in the best, like ready to perform at my absolute best. And I felt absolutely on fire on Saturday night, and I had no doubt that whether the eye was swollen or not, I would have stopped Joshua Franco in the next round or two and had a dominating performance and reclaim my world title.
There were a few moments where, you know, his side or people from Franco's team, Franco's camp are breaking down the footage just like everyone else's. And then they see a shoulder into the eye, or they see like a brief clash of heads that is pretty inconclusive. Did you feel any of that? I mean, it happens in fights all the time. Did you feel any of the heads come together, even, you know, even accidentally or just a graze?
No, I didn't at all. And certainly not anything that could have caused that sort of damage to his eye. I believe his eye socket has a fracture, and there certainly wasn't any contact with our heads that I even felt. And if there was something of that sort of significance, I certainly would have felt it. I remember very clearly landing a solid jab in the first round and seeing his eye swell instantly afterwards. And I watched back some footage yesterday in the Top Rank office, and we had multiple different angles of that punch, and it's very, very clear that that's what caused the damage to the eye.
Were you with Bob at the time, Mr. Aram?
Not at that moment we're watching the footage, no, but I believe he has been shown the footage.
I want to see what his emotions are, because he was livid as well. You know, it was a huge lead-in here in the States. You know, a lot of people watch college football. Big lead-in. I was telling my friends to tune in. It's going to be a great co-main and Terrence Crawford fighting in the main event. And then you have this happen. It was a great two rounds, a lot of action. Then this happens, 26 minutes. The commission really, you know, it's up to figure out if they got it right or wrong. But I think the general consensus is that they maybe have gotten this one wrong. But then you see, you know, people checking in from all walks of life. I mean, you expect LL Cool J and you expect Dame Lillard to check in. But Helen Mirren? I mean, that one really threw me off there. It just made a shockwaves throughout the boxing world and the sporting world. My question for you is, do you think that this was maybe, for lack of a better term, a black eye for boxing?
Yeah, absolutely. Firstly, you're right. The amount of support I've received has just been amazing over the last 48 hours or so. But yes, I believe, you know, the referee has a tough job. He has to make a decision very quickly. And that's why we have the instant replay, you know, available here in Nevada. And it would have been just the perfect opportunity to show how good that system can be. And to have looked over the footage, and as you can see, after 26 minutes, they still could not find any sort of head clash that could have caused that damage. And they would have had the opportunity to overturn the decision and the rightful winner to come out of that fight. But instead, it seems like they wanted to protect the referee's decision and made the wrong call And I think it's just bad for boxing that they didn't use the system which could have worked so well.
And you're right, Andrew, because if you don't have the right people manning the replay technology, what is the good use of it? Because they say that the referee is the arbiter of the ruling. It's his call, and then it's up to the commission to take a look on the replay. But very rarely do they overturn what the referee said because they don't want to make him look bad. And this happens all the time with commissions in terms of judges, too. They don't allow the judges to speak to the media. They very rarely criticize a judge when he has a poor scorecard. It's really a mess, and I think that this kind of highlighted, you know, the faults that are with these commissions. But let's look to the future. Now, Bob Arum just yesterday floated an idea of this super card in Australia that I know makes you happy. You've been on the road for a long time, and you talked about how you want to get back home to your family. But has there been any talks, and do you think we can get that third fight in Australia, you know, with Teofimo Lopez on the card fighting Kambosos, maybe Tim Zhu on the card as well? What have you heard about a third fight potentially happening in Australia?
Yeah, that's right. That was something we spoke about yesterday with Bob Arum, and he's keen to do this third fight with Franco in Australia, and that's what I want more than anything. After everything that I've been through with this fight on the weekend, to have this third fight in Australia and to finally be crowned world champion in front of all my friends and family and everyone who's supported me over the years, you know, that would make it all worthwhile, and that would be so special to me. And you know, that could be the good that comes from this whole situation.
Yeah, you're right. You kept a positive attitude, and I think you grew a lot of fans. I think you got a lot of fans out of this because they like your fighting style, like the way you handle it. One last thing before we go. There was towards the end of doing your post-fight interview, there was some chirping from Franco's side of things. What was said there? And I know you commented that they didn't exactly act professional in that. Do you have any ill feelings towards Team Franco after how this all shook out?
Yeah, I think they showed, you know, no class at all by the way that they handled themselves after the fight. It wasn't Joshua himself, it wasn't Robert Garcia, it was his son, mainly. He had a lot to say about what happened in the first fight and was, saying a lot to me, but I wasn't arguing about the first fight. I was arguing about what happened on Saturday night, and I won that fight convincingly for the two rounds that it went, and I believe I should have won that fight by TKO, and that's what I was arguing about. But, yeah, a lot of talk from them, but as you saw from my actions in the ring, I deserve to win that fight on Saturday.
Let's hope that we get a resolution to this. Let's hope that there's a third fight. It would be cool to see it in Australia. I'm sure you would take it in a parking lot at this point. But we appreciate the time, Andrew, and safe travels back to Australia. Get that quarantine and enjoy the holidays with the family. We'll get you back on the show in 2021. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. No, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
It's time for guest number two. You know him as Mr. Sources. Mr. Turtleneck. He's not wearing a turtleneck. I'm disappointed. Mike Coppinger does outstanding work for The Athletic, lead boxing writer, bringing a lot of news and breaking stories, and he joins us now here for... I'm going to go through some big hitters here, Mike. First of all, thanks for coming on the show. How you doing?
Thanks, Dan. Good to see you. Fellow Long Islander, so lots of love.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people at home don't understand, Mike, is that we come from the same hometown. Me and Mike Coppinger grew up in the same town on Long Island. So two of the brightest and best in the boxing journalism have come from one small little, I won't name it, town on Long Island.
Yeah, it's crazy. Knowing your dad, I always tell people that I met your dad at career day, and I still have the Coffee Box shirt. So
that
I'm a big
is...
fan of the Canobio family.
That is a story that we will have to do a whole podcast on. But I want to get to the heavy hitters. I want to get to the news and notes, and no one better than you at breaking that down. We saw Terrence Crawford this past weekend, destruction of Kell Brook. You had broken a story during the week about the friction at Top Rank between Bob Arum and Team Crawford. What is the latest on Terrence Crawford next, both inside and outside the ring?
Look, Dan, Crawford has not too much left on his contract with Top Rank. He's going to be, it expires in October of 2021. So that could be one fight, two more fights. I know they want to revisit that potential pay-per-view fight with Manny Pacquiao. It was being talked about for this month in Qatar. And They had Pacquiao. They already had Pacquiao's side of the deal done, $23.5 million guaranteed. They were talking to Crawford about somewhere like around $6.5 million guaranteed, plus upside at $5 a buy, over 300,000 pay-per-views. In the end, Qatar says, hey, look, COVID's getting worse over here. We can't have an event. But I know we saw Aram heard about – we heard Aram on the broadcast say he wants to revisit those talks in the Middle East, and that is with Qatar. So that could be a potential opportunity. If not, I would expect that it's Crawford fighting more of the same. Really, guys, we don't want to see him fight. As we get ready for you to watch Errol Spence fight Danny Garcia in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely wild that these fighters are still circling Manny Pacquiao. Just shows what status he has still in the sport at the ripe age of 42, 43. I have to check that. But in terms of Terrence with Top Rank, is this a fight with Pacquiao? Would that placate him at Top Rank? Would that make him happy? I don't understand why they can't do a fight with Sean Porter. I mean, is that PBC relationship with Top Rank, where is it at? Is it as frosty as ever? Or can they potentially do these fights? Because, like you said, running out of time. I know he got a good rating on ESPN, but people want to see Terrence Crawford at age 33 in with a viable opponent.
For one, PBC has been in no rush for a long time to make a fight with Top Rank and Terrence Crawford. I think part of the reason is, hey, why do we want to help out our competitors? We have all the welterweights, and we have plenty of fights that we can make between those welterweights, and they're doing one of those on December 5th with Errol Spence and Danny Garcia. I think part two of that is that, like you said, yeah, it's really frosty right now. It was looking pretty good after they did Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. They collaborated on that pay-per-view, ESPN and Fox. And then guess what? The rematch falls apart, and now there's a lot of finger points going on around whose fault it is that the third fight's not taking place, and our relationship, I'm hearing, is pretty bad right now. So I don't think there's a lot of hope. Well, I would love to see Sean Porter. I'm with you. Sean Porter, Terrence Crawford. Hell, Terrence Crawford, your Dennis Ugas would be a step up at this
Seriously.
Point.
Terrence Crawford or Jamal James. I'll take that.
Right. I'll take that too. But I think there's a third part to this, and that's if you're PBC and you want to sign Terrence Crawford, and like I laid out, and you mentioned that relationship has friction right now. Do you want to help soothe that friction, or do you want to wait for his contract to expire in October of 2021?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's things are moving, and I'm glad you put up the heavyweight division because that's something I want to touch on here. Tyson Fury not fighting on December 5th. That fight is now off. Bao Baram comes out and says that Tyson Fury will fight in 2021. It's either going to be the trilogy with Wilder, or if Anthony Joshua comes through, his fight with Pulev is going to be that fight with Anthony Joshua that a lot of fans are clamoring for. What's the latest on that, and what can we see Tyson Fury next? And in terms of the litigation, is this fight off because of the lawsuit or that Wilder had filed or was threatening to file? There's a lot of moving parts. Bring us up to speed in the heavyweight division.
Basically, yeah, Tyson Fury had agreed to terms to fight Agit Kabayel on December 5th at Royal Albert Hall in London. And what happened was ESPN was cutting its guarantee to Fury just based on a lot of factors. There wasn't enough money from ESPN and BT, and no fans, obviously. That hurt things. In the end, Fury decided to say, you know what, I'll just fight again in 2021 when the money is right. He wasn't going to take some big pay cut. Don't blame him. But it had nothing to do with the mediation, and the mediation is getting underway here shortly, or may have started. That's the first part of the dispute resolution provision in that contract, that two-fight deal. So after mediation, we'll follow arbitration with the same retired judge, and that'll be binding arbitration. So look, no one can force someone to fight someone. We've seen this a lot, right? We saw this with Andy Ruiz last year and Anthony Joshua. They're all saying contracts don't fight, fighters do. But they certainly could pursue damages if the judge rules in favor of Deontay Wilder.
Does the judge, I don't know if you know this, but does the judge take into account some of the things that Wilder has accused Fury's team and Fury of? Or his own corner, too?
That's a great question, Dan. I'm not sure if the judge will, but I'm certainly it should be considered. I saw Fury say in an interview that he's not going to sue Deontay Wilder for defamation, but that he could. And he's definitely right that he certainly could, and I don't see how he would lose. You can't just go making baseless accusations against someone. You're attacking their character. And I don't blame Tyson Fury for saying that he never wants to fight Deontay Wilder again because of those accusations.
It's a mess. Such a mess. Especially after what we saw this past weekend, Maloney and Franco, that fight's going to litigation too. I mean, it's just like boxing has a few fights and a lot of stuff out of the ring. Good for you in your line of work breaking the news. But in your opinion, Tyson Fury, his first fight of 2021 is against who?
I'm going to be optimistic here and say it's against Anthony Joshua. Although if I'm Fury's team, I would be a little concerned maybe about our fighter going into the biggest fight of his life off of such a layoff, especially a guy who, you know, is really big on activity and, you know, staying, you know, he's had problems with mental health and staying in shape. So that would be a concern for me, but it's the biggest fight by far that could be made in all of boxing. And yeah, Dan, just to touch on something. You're right. We always do have controversy in boxing. We have a lot right now. People always complain about it, but it's really what we love about boxing. I mean, boxing wouldn't be any fun without this stuff.
Exactly. I know a lot of people criticize, you know, fans that criticize like fanagers and why are you so concerned with the pay-per-view buys? This general interest in a sport that is sometimes lacks interest. So I'm all for fans getting involved. I'm all for fans, you know, having, you know, picking sides and figuring out who they want to win and who should get paid more. Just the beauty of the sport, a very unusual sport. Finally, before we say goodbye, Canelo Alvarez. Depending on when you watch this interview or listen to this interview, Canelo is going to be making an announcement. It's probably a fight, I'm guessing, with Callum Smith. Take us through some of the options that Canelo is going through, because obviously he announced his free agency. Caleb Plant fight seems like it's dead on arrival. What are you hearing for Canelo? And is this announcement, is it Callum Smith?
I believe it will be Callum Smith. I heard last that Callum Smith had agreed on the money, and that Canelo had agreed on the money too. I'm not sure what the holdup could be. I heard they were trying to iron out some things still. I know it could be a problem getting a site and all that sorted in such a short order, right? We are only a few weeks away now. So that could potentially be the holdup, but I would be shocked if it wasn't Callum Smith at 168 pounds in December, potentially the 19th. And it's a great fight, I think. You know, Canelo already beat Liam Smith four years ago. You have storylines there, but Caleb Plant was another fight that was intriguing. That option fell through. PBC was looking for a multi-fight deal for Canelo, and understandably, after all the friction and tension with Golden Boy, he wants to keep his flexibility on one-fight deals right now.
Intriguing time in the world of boxing. Ton of things swirling around. There's no one better than breaking it all down and getting you those scoops than Long Island's very own Mike Coppinger. Appreciate the time, Mike. We'll catch you next time.
All right. Catch you soon, Dan. Thanks again.
That is a wrap for this edition of Inside Boxing Live. A special thanks to our guests, Andrew Maloney and Mike Coppinger. Great stuff. And I'm really excited about this partnership we got with the eSports Boxing Club. Boxing finally has a video game on the way. It's going to be great. And we're going to be part of the video game as well with CompuBox Stats. So a lot of big things coming down the pipeline in terms of the boxing video games, and a lot of big news coming down the pipeline in terms of boxing in general. It's a mad dash to the end of 2020. It's been an up and down year, of course, with COVID-19 and everything. But we're ending the year strong. Canelo Alvarez, Errol Spence, Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones. I still can't believe that's happening. I still can't believe I'll be working a Mike Tyson fight. Of course, we're doing punch stats for that as well. We have a lot of stuff planned next week in terms of content for this Mike Tyson fight and Roy Jones. Everyone's talking about it. I posted something on Instagram yesterday. A ton of responses about Mike Tyson. The guy still resonates. And Roy Jones, it ain't no slouch either. So really looking forward to that fight, as well as some of the other things that are going on in boxing. When will Canelo fight? Where will Canelo fight? The Tyson Fury stuff is intriguing. Deontay Wilder, the latest from him is that Tyson Fury scratched him with his nails now. So that gets the excuse meter up to about 503 excuses, if my CompuBox count is correct. But it's a lot going on in the world of boxing, and we are always excited to bring it to you every single week here on Inside Boxing Live. Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones. I can't believe it. Who is your pick? Who are you going with? It's not going to be a winner. So I actually can't tell you, ask you who is your pick, because it's just an exhibition. Will Jones go in there and try to survive? Will Tyson go in there and knock him out, even though the fight doesn't have a winner? That's everything we're going to be talking about next week. We'll see you next week. Another edition of Inside Boxing Live.